The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Good morning and welcome to Autism Live during this really amazing month. I hope you're enjoying all the content that we've been giving you so far and looking forward to all the stuff that's coming up because it's off the chain. Next week, Temple Grandin. But a whole bunch of other people, too. Really, really amazing. I'll tell you. Well, let's just tell you. On Monday, Lillian Carrier from Autism is going to be here with us. On Tuesday, Dr. Doreen Grampuchet for Ask Dr. Doreen. On Wednesday, Thomas McKeon is going to be here. On Thursday, Dr. Temple Grandin. And on Friday, Jen Barreto is going to be here talking about, she's a wonderful autism expert, talking about self-injurious behavior. So you guys, it's off the chain, as they used to say. But today, oh my gosh, when we were planning this, I was like, you know, who are people that I just so enjoy hearing from them that I feel like uplift me and make me think that all things are possible and that I want to make sure their message gets out. And that's really what you're seeing during this month, as many of those people as we could get on the schedule. And so we're so lucky that today we have Katie Gibney, that she's going to be here. She's a wonderful autism expert who specializes in treating teens and adults. So I just love her. I know that you're going to love her. She's amazing. Just an amazing light on this planet. So stay tuned for that. First, we're gonna do a couple of things, some housekeeping, and we're going to do Jargon of the Day. Want to remind all of you that this show, you might be watching us on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter. And we hope that, because the show is premiering there right now. And if you're watching, you can feel free to write in and write your comments in. Or you might be watching us in podcast. Well, you're not watching us in podcast. You'd be listening to us in podcast. So that's what you might be doing. We are a free download wherever you get your podcasts, which is absolutely amazing. I'm doing more with podcasts, and I'm seeing that sometimes the podcast platforms, you have to pay to be on the platform, but we're everywhere. So if you need to find us and you don't want to pay for it because it's so important to us that you don't have to pay, keep looking for the podcast platforms where you can download for free because we don't want you to have to pay anything to be able to listen to us and take us on your walk or in the car or wherever it is that you're listening to us. I know one person who listens on their wireless headphones while they're doing dishes, which is a fabulous, fabulous thing. Wash away. But we want to remind you that throughout the podcast, you will hear advertisements. And we hope that you embrace those advertisers because they're making it possible for it to be a free download for you. Because it does cost us money to make it so that you can download it. If there are some of you, though, who've reached out to us and said, hey, I would rather pay a small monthly fee and have it without the advertisers. If that's you, there's an easy way to do that. You go to glow.fm/autismlive. When you go there, and look, there the fabulous Chris Desmond has it for you on the screen if you're watching. glow.fm/autismlive. When you go there, it should already be on our page, Autism Live, and it's $5 a month unless you want to pay across a year, and it's even less expensive then. And you sign up, and then what happens is they will send you every time we do a new podcast on the Autism Network. And here's the wonderful thing. It's the full Autism Network. So we have individual podcasts, Autism Live and Ask Dr. Doreen, and all the different things that we do on Autism Live. You will get all of those free of ads if you do the glow.fm way of doing things. So that's available to you if you want. If you prefer to do that on your other podcast thing and you don't mind listening to the advertisements, woohoo! It's all good. So we also encourage you, we're trying to get our message and our goal here always at Autism Network is to provide information and inspiration. That's it. That's what we're about. That's what it all boils down to. And we want to give that to that larger autism community that starts, of course, with individuals who are themselves on the spectrum. We feel very that is the key place that we start from, that place and those voices, and giving those voices a place here to speak, whether it's being a guest on Autism Live or driving the content on Stories from the Spectrum. We feel that that's really important. But we also feel like that it's very important to include everyone who loves those individuals and is trying to be a strong ally, whether that's a parent, a teacher, a significant other, a sibling. We want to help everybody to get the best information and inspiration to be able to be a good ally to the individuals that you love in your life. So that's really what we're about here. And we hope that you will spread that message, because we want to get that message to as many people as we possibly can. You can do that right now by liking what you're listening to. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you're watching, or subscribe to us on, you can follow us on Facebook or subscribe to us on YouTube. You can also write a review for us. Wherever you're listening, wherever you're watching, if you give us a review or simply give us a comment, that helps drive more people to be able to find it. So and if you can help in any way, we appreciate that, because that helps us get that message further and wider. I had to think about what I was saying there for a second. Not often that I think about what I'm saying, which leads me to my very next thing, which is we often like to start the show with something we fondly refer to as the jargon of the day. Today's jargon day, and I see I'm already eating up most of my time. Today's jargon term is a toughie. It's a good one, but it's a toughie. It's DRA. Oh, whose head hurts now? Let me raise my hand. Okay, we're going to give you an actual definition. I may or may not make fun of some of the terms in it. Not so much anymore. And then we'll go on to a working definition. I wanted us to see, particularly, though, how much better the definitions have gotten. So I've given you two different definitions from two different sites. Let's go ahead and look at our actual definition. And DRA stands for Differential Reinforcement of Alternative Behaviors. I'll bet you already knew that. Actually not. If you knew that, you get a gold star. But you can think of it as DRA, or you can think of it as Differential Reinforcement of Alternative Behaviors. So our definition, which comes to us from Cooper et al., the 2020 version, DRA is a type of differential reinforcement. Uh-oh, not really defining it. That focuses on reinforcing a behavior that serves the same function as the problem behavior, but is more appropriate or desirable. Now, I want to hug Cooper et al., because they have come a long way. This is a lot better than what they would have had before. But the definition doesn't really help us if we don't already know what differential reinforcement is, right? But this idea of, okay, we're going to, I do love that it says that it serves the same function as the problem behavior. I don't really like the word problem, but okay. And I don't really like saying it's more appropriate or desirable, but, you know, that is kind of what we're getting to in a broad sense. So let's now go on to our working definition and see if we can't make heads or tails. Now, this comes to us from studynotesaba.com, and there are a lot of things I like about this one, a couple of things that I don't like. We'll talk about that. Differential reinforcement of alternative behaviors. This procedure is used to decrease, again, problem behavior by reinforcing appropriate alternative behaviors. Well, there's the word again in the definition. And withholding reinforcement for any instance of the problem behavior. It is important. This is the part of this definition why I included it. It's important to pick an appropriate alternative behavior whose function matches the problem behavior. I don't like that we just keep calling it problem. I like calling it challenging behavior, because I think sometimes we get just so confused about the difference between the individual and the behavior, right? And so if you're using the word problem with the behavior, people start to think that the individual is a problem, and I don't believe that individuals on the spectrum are a problem. I realize that it's just an inference, but I like to keep it separate, right? So, and we all face challenges, right? So I like challenging behavior better, but you guys write in and tell us what you like. But so we've identified that a behavior is in some way impeding progress, that it, in some way it's challenging, right? That maybe it's a child who is spitting on their hands at school and they are rubbing the saliva on their desk, right? This is a behavior we see a lot of, and the people write in. It's by no means the only challenging behavior that somebody can do, but I think we can all agree that that is a behavior that's going to impede progress in so many different ways. First of all, it's a health concern. Can you imagine during COVID? I mean, we're still worried about viruses, right? A child spitting and putting it on the desk. Oh, my gosh. Now we got to disinfect, right? It becomes a health hazard. But it also is going to make it very hard for them to hold a pencil and write their name. It's just not a behavior that we really want to see in this particular setting. Is there a time and a place? Perhaps, but not in a school setting. So we might deem this, in this one setting, a challenging behavior, or for our definitions, a problem behavior. Lots of different ways we can work on this, but DRA is a method of saying, hey, let's take a look at this behavior. What's the function of the behavior? Now, it could be several different things, right? But let's say that we look at the function of the behavior and we decide that it's a sensory thing, that the individual likes the feel of it, that spit is a little bit sticky, right? And they're liking the way it feels. They like the way it looks. It's pleasurable to their senses. It's a very calming thing for them, helps them to, you know, feel calm. Okay, so we don't want to poo-poo that. That's a real need, but DRA says let's find something that is an alternative behavior, that something that fulfills the exact same need, and then we're going to teach this, and then we're going to make sure that when we give reinforcement, it's for that behavior, and we are not going to give reinforcement for the other behavior. It sounds like so withholding, but the fact of the matter is that if I go up to people and slap people and I get my way, I'm being reinforced for it. And if you want me to stop slapping people, you got to stop giving me a reward for it, okay? So we are going to withhold reinforcement for some things. It's not as withholding and as negative as it sounds. But in this instance, you know, we're going to decide what the reinforcement that's meaningful to the individual, right? You know, perhaps what they like is a break and to have cookies, right? But if we've done the thing on the table, instead of the cookie time, we're cleaning up the table, right? So we're making it less of a reward, you know, for having done that. Not a punishment, but, you know, we have to deal with the thing. And instead, we give them, because it's a sensory, pleasurable thing, they call them silkies, a little blanket or an animal that's a silky, same. We've had so many people on the spectrum tell us, oh, it fulfills that need. And so when they play with the silky, we make sure that we reinforce that and say, oh, you know, what a great job. You know, with your silky, let's have the cookies. A broad example, right? Another example is that sometimes, you know, kids will act up because they want to get out of doing something. So, you know, they, instead of wanting to take a bath, that maybe they bite their brother and now mom's standing there giving them a lecture and they're getting out of the bath time, right? So if we're going to DRA this thing, we would say that we're going to, that the function of the behavior here, that the biting in this particular instance is to escape the bath. Right? They want to get out of the bath even for a couple of minutes. So instead, we teach them, hey, you know, the phrase, hey, can I have another minute? They taught my son that. Hey, can I have another minute? He literally would say that. Can I please wait for something? Sometimes they hold up a card or they say, I need a break. Whatever the thing is, they ask for that thing to hold off the bath, right? It's an alternative behavior, but it fulfills the same need. I don't have to go to the bath right now. And we reinforce that. Now, eventually, we need to get to the bath, right? But sometimes getting to take the break and feeling control is so important, right? You get to escape it even for a couple of minutes. And then we reinforce that heavily. So when they say, hey, can I wait to take the bath, which is what we taught them, we say, yes, absolutely, you can have a break. You know, let's set the clock. You got a 5-minute break here, but you don't have to go take the bath. That's how we reinforce that. But if they were to bite, which was the original behavior, we would pick them right up. We would not have an argument. We would pick them right up, and it would be time to get in the bath. We don't throw anybody in the bath, right? But we don't delay it. And we don't yak at them. That's attention. So we don't give the reinforcement of the break and the attention, but for biting, right? But we would give it for saying, hey, can I take a break? So that's what DRA is, giving an alternative that fulfills the same need. It's a really great thing. It's being mindful about what the need was that the individual had so that basically we make the other behavior unnecessary. You don't need to throw a fit or bite somebody to take a break. You don't need to spit on the table to be able to feel that sensory input. I love it. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and then we are going to be back with the fabulous, the wonderful Katie Gibney. We're going to talk about adults and teens. Stick with us. Welcome back, everybody. It's week 3 here at the Autism Network for Autism Awareness, Action, Acceptance, Appreciation. And we're so excited to be bringing you wonderful content. On Monday of this, the third week, we're having Autism. We love having her on the show. Then on Tuesday, Dr. Green, Grampy Shader, and Ask Dr. Green, the topic is food selectivity. If your child is only eating certain foods and not eating other ones, you'll want to tune in for that. On Wednesday, we're joined by Thomas McKeon, who is a wonderful advocate and author, and he might be bringing up some controversial things on the show. We'll look forward to that. On Thursday, it is the fabulous Dr. Temple Brandon joining us to talk about her newest book. Make sure you tune in for that. And then on Friday, Jen Barreto is going to be with us. She is a wonderful expert in the field of autism, particularly in self-injurious behavior. It's going to be a very serious talk about identifying self-injurious behavior and how to help that individual so that they don't need to hurt themselves. Don't miss that show. In fact, if you miss any of the shows, even from earlier weeks, make sure that you catch them in podcasts. You can visit all of our social media channels to find out what the schedule is so that you never have to miss anything again. And the full schedule for the full month is available on all of those channels. Check it out. Welcome back. I'm so excited because we are going to welcome an amazing guest. I'm talking about Katie Gibney. Now, you're going to see on the screen that her name is Caitlin Gibney, but I've known her for a pretty long time. So I'm going to reserve the right to call her Katie. But we feature on this show all the time amazing human beings. Some of them are individuals who are on the spectrum. Some of them are autism experts. And today it's the second category. Katie Gibney is a true autism expert. I love that you're going to look at her and think, oh my gosh, she looks so young. And she is so young. Let's not befuddle that. But she has been working in this field for over 20 years. So, and during that time, she has made such a tremendous impact on a lot of people, including myself. She is a board certified behavior analyst. She specializes in working with teens and adults, and I'm going to let her tell the rest. Let's get Katie Gibney in here so that you guys can hear from her. There she is. Katie, you look like a teenager.
No, thank you.
But we're so thrilled to have you. I guess I'm going to start with, so you've been working for CARD, the Center for Autism and Related Disorders, for more than 20 years now. I always love to ask people what their origin story. How did you get involved in autism and, in particular, working in the field of ABA?
So many, many years ago, Doreen was working with a neighbor of mine, a little guy, and the family was hiring girls in the neighborhood to come and be therapists. And I started working with Doreen and Evelyn Kung back when I was in high school. The family hired me as a therapist, but I was trained by Doreen and Evelyn. So I've been with CARD ever since. And after that, when I went to college, I joined on some workshop cases with CARD and worked with clients through college in you know, in Santa Barbara and then also on the East Coast. So I've always stayed and I love it. And now my little guys that I started with are in their 20s and their 30s. And so that's where my passion lies, is with our teen and adult population.
And thank goodness for that. But I just have to say, for anybody who's watching, so often I hear from parents who maybe are starting their ABA program. And sometimes, as I did when I was a new parent, somebody will say, oh, you know, we're getting a new behavior technician on our team and they're brand new. They've just come out of training. And we really, you know, we asked for somebody with more experience and we want the most experienced person that they have at with this organization to be the person. And the Doreen, by the way, in case people are tuning in and this is your first time watching the show, the Doreen is Dr. Doreen Grampichet, right? And recently, I know a parent who said, I would like for Dr. Grampichet to be the behavior technician with my child. Because that's what a parent does. You say, I'd like the most experienced person I can, you know, find the email for it, and that I want them to work with my child. But I always like to remind people that the new people coming in are sometimes fabulous. And think about that parent in that neighborhood who hired the teenage Katie Gibney, not realizing that she was going to have a thought leader that was going to be doing therapy with her child. So you never know who the next Katie Gibney is going to be. Don't be afraid of the new BTs, because often they're really, really fabulous. But I guess I have to ask, what was it about working with that? It sounds like it was a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
Was it about it that made you go, okay, not only do I want to keep doing this, but I want to go to school for it. And I think I maybe want to do this for the rest of my life. Like, what was the thing that made it so fun?
I think it was, I feel very lucky, because I think a lot of people don't figure it out right away what they want to do. But honestly, it was working with him all those years and seeing the progress just right in front of my eyes. He started nonverbal. And by the time I left for college, you know, with the support of everybody, his team, his family, you know, he was speaking and he was back in school. And just to see that change that we made in a short but long, you know, period of time was inspirational at a young age for me to keep going.
That's going to make me cry. I think sometimes we forget that the people who have signed up to work with our kids are people that it's important to them to make a difference. That they care truly about you and your kids, and that they sign up to make a difference. So remember that when you're working with your ABA team. But we asked you specifically to come, Katie, because we get a lot of questions from families of teens and adults. And the questions are varied. But one of the first questions that people will write in and ask us is, you know, we hear all this stuff about ABA for little kids. But is it something that you can still do with teens and adults? Let's start there. Is it a viable thing? And then my second question of it, does it look different than it does with a 3-year-old?
100%. It depends on, you know, where your teen or adult is at, but definitely progress can be made, starting at a later age. And I'm a huge advocate for that. I think no matter what level they come in, there's a lot of skills that we can teach. And, you know, a lot of our teens and adults, we're focused on teaching them, you know, core skills that they need to learn possibly. And it is just those basic ABA skills that we would use maybe with, you know, teaching younger children. But it's focused more on, okay, how do we teach this skill? How do we generalize it out into the community or with, you know, different people into different environments as they're older and they're out and about? And just really, when I look at programs for our teens and adults, looking at, you know, emphasizing increasing just their independence and how can we individualize their ABA program, just like we would with the younger kiddos, but to just really fit their needs, their passion, their likes and dislikes, and create a program that also is supporting the family. Because if we don't have a program that's supported by the family and working on, you know, focusing on things that we want to improve with your son or daughter, it doesn't work. But definitely, you know, looking at just their schedules as well is something that we kind of look at when we're creating their program. You know, is it less structured because maybe they just graduated from high school, or, you know, making that big transition? That's a huge change where a lot of families will come in and they need help at that point because their world's been kind of turned upside down. And, you know, a lot of our teens and adults thrive off that schedule, but we want to make sure it's not too rigid, but still in place for them as they're leading into adulthood.
I'm sure you know that as parents, what we call that period of time when school and services the school services have stopped, whether that happens at 18 or 22 or 24, parents, we call that the cliff. Because for many years, parents felt like, okay, we were clipping along at a certain level and we were having progress. And now it's literally that we've been dropped off on the edge of a cliff and there's no place to go. I love that is starting to change. Now, one of the big things that people, and I talked with you about this before we started the show, but one of the big things that people write into us about is once they determine, okay, ABA can be helpful to my teen or adult, where do I find it? Because that's the next part of the equation that seems to be a little hard to overcome right now. That so many parents are writing to us and saying, I called like 10 ABA providers and they all say some version of the same thing. We don't treat kids your child's age. Now, we didn't even talk about what your current position is at CARD, the Center for Autism and Related Disorders. So what is your official real title at CARD right now?
Right now it is Clinical Director for Teen and Adult Patients. So,
okay.
I'm here to help all of our adolescents.
So right there, the implication being that potentially there might be, depending on availability, that CARD is treating teens and adults.
Yes.
And that in and of itself is absolutely amazing. I want to marry this back to the last question because I'm sure people are like, wait, what? I remember explaining this to somebody several years ago and saying, because they were like, well, you know, ABA is over for us. We can't. And I was like, what do you, CARD treating teens and adults. And then the flood of questions that came. What? That's a possibility. And you were just talking about how it really is individualized, that it to the person, to the family, to the schedule, to the individual needs of that person. So let's just take a couple of scenarios that let's say that somebody has a 15-year-old that's still in school, going to high school, but is nonverbal. I'm just, making it up as I go. But we get this question all the time, a 15-year-old who's nonverbal and they're wanting to still work on functional communication because we know that that's critical for everyone, that functional communication is a huge, huge thing that we need to make sure that every person gets that opportunity. And the family comes to you and says, we'd like to start ABA and we want to prioritize functional communication. So tell us a little bit about what that person's lessons, programs, and day would look like. And then I'm going to give you something completely opposite. A 24-year-old who's graduated from college but is having difficulty with keeping a job and maintaining relationships and what those two vastly different circumstances, but where your team and you might be able to help both those people. I know it's like stump Katie Gibney, but I know you're not stumped at all because this is easy for you.
A little bit. This is the spectrum we see. It's wide. So we go from, many, many different programs that we set up. And, for the 15-year-old example that you gave, if I were to do the intake and they came in, of course we would focus on functional communication because at 15, that is something, we're going to need to catch up a little bit probably if they don't have a lot of it already, but we would look at maybe, a possible AAC device or, is there some vocal language that we can work and build on? and, you know, focus on social lessons, language, all those areas, and try to get them to a place where they can functionally communicate, to also, you know, to help also decrease behaviors. So if we see that increase in their functional communication and they also maybe have some maladaptive behaviors, we'll see a nice decrease there as well. So definitely, yes, we would work on functional communication along with other things that maybe are needed at that time based on, you know, what deficits are arising, but also maybe what the parents would like us to help focus on as well. We listen to a lot of parent priorities and what's important to them as well for their son or daughter. And then the 24-year-old example would be vastly different. You said maybe in college. I'm trying to...
Graduated from college. Graduated from college. But is having trouble keeping a job. They can get a job. They've got skills. But keeping the job and maintaining friendships, because that's a really hard thing.
It's really hard. And it's really common. And so, you know, with a client like that, we would focus on, let's bump up those executive functioning skills, social skills. You know, we would maybe go in and see how work is going, if possible, and see, okay, these are the areas that this person is struggling with. And here's how we can help, and really individualize it to their needs at that point. To maintain friendships or have good relationships with coworkers, understand the social norms in a work setting. And those are all things that we would work on with an adult client, maybe in that type of situation.
I just love talking to you because I know this is going to open up a world of possibility for parents to go, oh, okay. So, because I think one of the pendulum always swings back and forth, right? I remember back in the day, we only had our ABA services in the home. There were no ABA centers. And now there are ABA centers, you know, I probably passed 20 of them on my ride home, right? And I think that parents think of that now. You take, this is exactly how they think of ABA, that you take your three-year-old and you drop them off at a place and you pick them up later on. Which is not really the whole be all end all, because even with a 3-year-old, sometimes there are sessions at home. Sometimes there are sessions at the playground, at church, wherever the 3-year-old needs to be. But I think people kind of miss that. And so when they think of ABA for a 15-year-old or a 24-year-old who's already graduated from college, they're trying to picture them sitting at a table in a center for 3-year-olds where they're in the little blue plastic chairs, right? And I think everybody's brain goes, uh-uh. But so I love the examples that you gave about, you know, it's always with ABA, it's part of it is taking the people where they need to be to learn the thing that they need to learn. So with the 24-year-old, and you were talking about maybe we go to work with them, that's a possibility.
It is, definitely. Anything's a possibility. Wherever the help is needed, you know, we just cater to kind of what's needed in the moment and make it work. But yes, sitting in a center with the little blue chairs is, you know, probably not where we're at that point for sure.
Exactly. But but I can hear people saying, wait a second though, does insurance cover these things? Now, there's been a huge, huge controversy in the last 10 years over this because, oh, the way we did it, it's funny because looking back on it in hindsight, you know, we are at a place right now where we have a mandate in all 50 states so that ABA, there should be a policy in every state that you're at that covers ABA. The thing is that in some of the individual states, they also had state laws that prevented people at a certain age, they would age out of whatever that state law is. And so there was that. People were like, well, you know, my child is over the age of 8. And in this state, it says the insurance cutoff is age 8, which is incredible to me. But a group of wonderful people brought up and have won on several cases. We need to have Julie Kornack back on the show to talk about MAPEA, which is the Mental Health Parity and Education Act. I might have some of my ears off. But it says that federal law supersedes state law, and it means that most of you, if you have been told by your insurance, it's not everybody, but for most of you, if you've been told that your child is aging out of insurance and that was the denial, you can win an appeal in most states. So, so in most cases, not in all, because I can't say that carte blanche, but in most cases, ABA is still something that can be covered regardless of somebody's age. Am I in the neighborhood of correct, Katie?
Yeah. Yes. If there's still an area of need that needs to be, worked on through ABA, through parent training, that, caregiver training, that is something that we can definitely try to get funding for with insurance, by setting specific goals with benchmarks to help them, hopefully get the funding that's needed at that point.
Yes. It's a very fine line because people will write in and say, well, I'd like help with dating. And ABA insurance is not going to cover that. I wish that it did, but there are some skills that you use in dating that, that the program could be written that we're working on this skill, which will lend itself well to dating, but we're working on it, because it's a skill, not because it's a dating skill. Tell me if I say anything that's inappropriate.
You got it. No, I mean, someone who wants to go on a date, definitely we could work on EF skills, planning. How do you plan to go on a date? What are the first steps? Social skills. How do you ask someone out? What are some of the person's interests? How do you tap into that to go on a date and have a conversation? There's a lot of skills that we can teach that are covered under insurance that lead into going on a date.
Which is wonderful. So my advice is if you are an adult and you feel that there are areas of your life where you're having difficulty that are affecting your life, that you could take some action on this, that it's potential that you could be working on this. Now, Katie, should they look and see if there is a Center for Autism and Related Disorders near them? And then if they are an adult, will you automatically be doing the intake or will it be someone locally who will consult with you because you're the clinical director?
Right. I will not do the intake, but we have great clinicians out there across all of CARD, the U.S., who would be doing the intakes, but I also see all of our cases. So I would definitely have my fingers in the pot to say.
I love that. I was thinking fingerprints, but I love the fingers in the pot. I love that. So, I think it's important to say here, because I, as an adult, I can say that all of us have parts of our life where we're like, oh, I wish I had someone to work on that with, right? But mostly for insurance, you would need to already have a diagnosis for autism in order to be eligible to get the insurance funding as part of CARD. You would want to reach out to CARD and see if your insurance accepts CARD, and then you can move forward and have the intake and eventually have Katie on your case, which I love. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about another problem that our parents of teens and adults will write in and talk about this. And that's getting that individual to want to work on things. That whether it is a 14-year-old who is like, why do I have to do this? Up to, I can think of one mom. It's funny, in both cases that I'm thinking about, they were young women. That there was one mom who would write into us on a regular basis and say, what my 19-year-old daughter would like to do, what she loves to do is to stay in her pajamas, sit on a stool, and have a cup of coffee with a spoon. And that she will sit on that stool and she will, drink from the mug it needs to have a spoon in it. If you try to take the spoon out, it's not the same. But that she wants to sit on a kind of an uncomfortable stool in the kitchen, regardless of whether somebody is there or not. And that's all that she wants to do. And mom would say to us on a regular basis, how do I motivate her to want to do anything else?
Right.
Motivation, huge part of this, right? What's your advice for families who are wanting to motivate that teen or adult to want to work on something?
Right. It's hard. It's hard when they're set on the things that they enjoy, especially that age,
Yeah.
But I just say keep exposing them to new things and hopefully, as you expose them to new interests, new activities, something becomes also motivating, but also tap into what is motivating. So if sitting and drinking coffee on the bar stool is motivating, then how could we maybe try to branch this young lady out to a coffee shop? You know, like, let's take that interest and get it in the community and get her out and socializing with other people and build on what is motivating her in a different way, possibly.
I love
easier said than done, I know. But, you know, I think too, showing them visually sometimes, or just explaining it, if you work on this hard thing, which is, you know, something maybe really difficult, having a conversation, this could lead to a potential friendship. You know, the more you work on it, the more you work on these skills, you know, having a really great friend or a good partner is something that you want. If we build on these skills, that's the end goal. So sometimes just kind of showing them big picture helps, but, you know, I like to tap into what their interests are and try to expand a little bit if we can.
Well, I love that, because I think that that's the humane way of looking at it, right? Mm-hmm. And I think there's a big, big push right now about, I think all parents are very and rightly concerned about doing things with their kids, their teens, and their adults that are good for them, but also don't make them miserable. I think that's a basic thing that we all want as a parent. No parent goes, well, I'd like for you to make my child miserable, right? That's not what the goal ever is. But sometimes when you're trying to push and prod, the line gets a little blurry, right? Like, I'm picturing this mom, as soon as you said that about, well, maybe she would enjoy sitting in the coffee shop on a stool, that might open a whole other thing. But I know how we are as parents, that I can picture that mom saying, well, then what I want her to do is dress appropriately to sit on the stool. And now we've got two things, that she's having to go out in public and she's having to dress appropriately. That sometimes maybe we got to pick one thing. Not that we want her to go in pajamas to the coffee shop, but there are pajamas that you could wear that nobody would know that you had pajamas on when you went to the coffee shop. That we would not die of embarrassment if our child was there on the... There are other pajamas that we would die of embarrassment right there. But we get a little, I don't know how to explain it. It's so hard for parents. We get so like, well, I'd like to do this, but I'd like to do that, but this would be hard. And sometimes we get paralyzed as parents, and we will get stuck with our kids in the moment because we're afraid of upsetting them and we're afraid of not honoring them. And it's important to do both, right? It's important that we not be afraid of, we can't constantly be walking on eggshells, right? Yes. Because then our whole life changes too, and they don't get to do things that are important for them. But we also need to honor their spirit. So I love you saying, let's take the thing that they want to do and let's just try to expand it. That seems like a very humane thing we could do.
And that's just... with all of us, you know, no one wants to do anything they don't want to do,
but amen.
We all have things that we enjoy. But there are, you know, I think it's just focusing on, you know, their dislikes and their likes and how you can find a good balance and, you know, pick your battles. That's always something too.
And here you are, you're somebody who has been doing this for many years, and you weren't always focused on the teen and adults, but as that started to come into focus with you, I'm wondering if you could tell us a couple of success stories that help parents to realize how much something can change for the better. Like, are there a couple of stories that you can think of? Obviously, you know, you'll tell it in a way that you won't disclose who they are, because that's the kind of expert you are. But what can you share with us? A message of hope.
Yes. Oh, gosh. There's so many. A couple that come to my mind right away is a patient of mine who was graduating high school in a couple of years. And so the mom and I were working together to come up with kind of a game plan for after school, you know, the cliff that you speak of.
Yes.
The horrible, dreadful cliff that's coming. And, you know, we wanted to come up with a great plan for when he was done with school. And he's verbal, but has a lot of vocal perseveration and really, really loves numbers and organization. So what we started to do was try different volunteer opportunities around and go and just tap into different things. We found that he really enjoyed the library. He liked the structure of it. He liked the number organization. And after he graduated school, he started a volunteer position working at the local library just a couple nights a week, and a therapist would shadow him. And now he's going, you know, his mom takes him, but he's going to the library and he's working there. And it's just a great success story. We had a little hiccup with COVID and had to reteach a few things after he was allowed back in the library. And that was a bummer. You know, we all were kind of like, oh man, can we get back to where we were? And he bounced right back. And it's amazing that he has this great opportunity and he enjoys it. It's something that he actually really loves every day. Like when he's going, it's something he enjoys. So that was a huge success for this family and for this patient.
That's amazing. Because that's a life well lived. We've talked so much this month about identity and about, I had the opportunity to be in a car with Dr. Temple Grandin and Kobe Bird, the actor from Lock and Key, Netflix Lock and Key. Mm-hmm. And they were having a conversation about identity. And they both said that overwhelmingly, they identify themselves by their profession, not by their diagnosis. And you know, when somebody has a job, whether it is a paying job or a not a paying job, because I think, you know, talk to any mother and they will tell you that the job that they do the most, that they love the most, is being a mom. We don't get actual paid for that, but still a job. And a job should be something that you love. And when an individual on the spectrum has that, we see people blossom. Just blossom. So what a wonderful thing. And it goes with the things that he was wanting to do anyway. Fantastic. Do you want to share another one?
Yeah, I have a great one. Another client of mine who I've worked with in the past, he engaged in a lot of visual stereotypy. And it was in the way of him doing a lot of different things. And so it was kind of the same crossroad of, okay, what are we going to do when school is out? And his mom tried painting with him, and this blossomed into a great hobby of his that provided that visual input with all the colors and the lines from the painting. And that's become, you know, an occupation for him as well. You know, and it took many, many, many years, but it's something that he does daily and he enjoys it, and it brings some sort of calm to his day and kind of balances him out in a way. And he listens to music while he paints, and it decreases some of the stereotypy at times. It's just been an amazing, you know, I don't even know what to call it. I guess a job or a hobby that he does that just kind of came unexpectedly, but now it's turned into just a great outlet for him.
Katie, are you still there? We may have lost her. That's okay. We'll see if we can get her back. While we're waiting for Katie to come back, I'm going to give you guys a little bit of information that Katie, as I said, is she's a clinical director at the Center for Autism and Related Disorders. They do treat teens and adults. It's very individualized. And I love that Katie is the one who is overseeing all of those programs. So the individual will have a supervisor that is a BCBA that's with them on a regular basis, but Katie oversees all of that program, the teens and adults. Pretty amazing thing. You can find out more by going to centerforautism.com, click on the locations tab, and then you can put information in about where you are. I don't always love the functionality of that tab, so give it a whirl, see if you can put in your zip code and if it gets you something close, but then also back up so that you can see, sometimes the zip code feature is not as refined as I want it to be. There's Katie. We lost you for just a second.
All right.
That's okay.
I'm in the wild state of Texas where we lose power with crazy storms.
Oh so my goodness. Sorry. Well, we talk to people all over the world, Katie, and you wouldn't be the first person who froze or that went away. We deal with that on a regular basis. It's all good. And you had a lovely expression on your face when you were frozen. So well done. You handled it well. Whenever it freezes with me, I'm always like,
Yeah, that's always my fear.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, no. You had a lovely expression on your face. It took me a long time to realize that you were frozen. But anyway, I was just filling them in about how they could reach out to CARD potentially start services and ask questions. If there was one thing that you wanted parents to know about having their teens and adults treated for ABA, what would it be? And I'm going to give you a second to think of that because I'm throwing that at you. And not to steal your answer, but the one thing that I want parents to know is that so often with teens and adults, there is a level of anxiety that is present. And I think the world tells us, well, anxiety is just a part of everything. It's going to be a part of everything that you do. And I think the world also tells us that for when your child has autism stamped on their file, then that's the big thing. It's the only thing. And that anxiety doesn't get to be considered. And I feel like it's a huge part of every ride and that it's a huge part of every ride for teens and adults with autism. And that it should never be poo-pooed. It should never be dismissed. It should never be left alone. And that if we think about ourselves, what causes anxiety in us and what helps us to overcome anxiety and that feeling of being safe and feeling like you're in control and that you're competent and that you have a place, I think that all plays a role in anxiety and reduction of anxiety. So I'm a big fan of saying to people, if you help, first of all, with communication and building infrastructure, that you'll help with anxiety. So that's what I wish people would know. But Katie, what do you wish? You're somebody who's been working in this field. What do you see and you wish that you could say to parents? Right. But feel free to say anxiety too.
No, I mean, I think what you said is amazing and it's so, so true. My takeaway would be to just for all these parents out there to know that ABA can still help. It can help your adolescent, teen. It can help your adult. There are a lot of things that we can still help with. And, just keep your son or daughter social and staying out and staying busy. And, if it's just your family goes for hikes, go for hikes. If, you're teen or adult is interested in the movies, go to the movies. Just stay out and stay social because they're going to want to stay home and they're going to want to avoid some of these, social interactions. But my advice would be just stay social, stay active, and keep them engaged in the community because that is the best thing that you can do. And just know that ABA doesn't end with a certain age. And, we are here. Other people are out there to help. And it's a time when it's so hard for parents, that age range of, 18 beyond, or even before. And just know that there's so many resources out there and agencies that will still help you. And a lot of change and good can be done past any age.
And I would be remiss if I let you go without discussing that one of the tools that you guys use at CARD, with the younger kids, they use one version of skills, but with the teens and adults, you use another version of skills that's called Skills Living. And I believe that that is also available to private consumers if that's something that you're interested in. That, my goodness, it's a huge, huge thing. 16 different curricula areas, am I right?
Yes. And it teaches everything, from money awareness, social awareness, getting an apartment to just the basics of preparing food or, balancing a checkbook. It goes from one end to the other with a lot of different skills, depending on where you're at or where your son or daughter is at. And it will just help break it down into easy steps to teach, whatever goal that they're working towards at that point.
So Skills Living, I believe you can find that at skillsforautism.com. We'll try to make sure that we have a link for it. Katie, you're amazing.
You're amazing, Shannon. Thanks for having me.
You are so, you just have such a calm, calming presence. And I know because I've seen you at work that everybody just loves to be around you. And so for our teens and adults, you're just such a gift. And you also have that ability to see individuals as individuals and with all the respect and the empathy that should be afforded to them but isn't always. So I just want you to know that I respect and admire you and the work that you're doing always.
Oh, same right back at you.
Well, much love to you. I hope we get to see you sometime soon. But it's just a pleasure to know you. And I always sleep better knowing that you're helping our teens and adults.
Oh, I'm here for all of you. Thank you for having me.
I'm so thrilled to have you. You have a wonderful rest of your day and weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Great. All right. You too. Thanks, Shannon.
Bye-bye. Bye. What a great, great, expert clinician. Doesn't it just give you guys so much hope? I just love her. Let's talk a little bit about next week because we are just continuing on with autism this month that we call the A month. It's awareness, acceptance, action, and appreciation. And we're adding more A words as we go along. So on Monday, you guys, oh my gosh, I just adore and love this young woman. Lillian Carrier is going to be with us. You know her. She's a pretty well-known actress. She was on the show Everyone's Gonna Be Okay. I always get it wrong. Is it Everything or Everyone's Gonna Be Okay? Hilarious show if you've not watched it. Oof. But she and her sister also founded a charity called Ourtism. And it is there to support, as we were talking about, teens and adults on the autism spectrum. So we're gonna hear more from her about what they're doing. They've got a big open house coming up. Then on Tuesday, we have Dr. Graham Pichet, and she is going to be talking with us. And of course, I'm going to say, I think that's the week that we're talking about. I think Tuesday is when we're talking about aggression. I'm almost positive. Then on Wednesday, Thomas McKeon is going to be with us. If you've never seen him or heard him, he's a wonderful human being who tends to run a little bit controversial. So that'll be fun. And we're going to be talking specifically with him about identity. It gets a little sticky because it's a little bit different for everybody, but we always welcome Thomas to be here on the show. And then on Thursday, oh, my friends, on Thursday, it is April. We have to have Dr. Temple Grandin on. She will be on Thursday. She's talking about her new book, which is geared specifically, I mean, it's for all of us. But the book is written for third grade through eighth grade reading level. It's a great book to explain different minds. That's what the title of it is, Different Kinds of Minds. So you're going to want to tune in for that. And then on Friday, Jen Barreto is going to be with us. She's an autism expert, and she's going to be talking with us about the very serious subject of self-injurious behavior. What it is, what it looks like, how we can effectively treat it so that we give individuals who are engaged in self-injurious behavior a better way to express what's happening other than hurting themselves. Very serious subject, but we're so grateful that Jen Barreto will be here with us to make that all happen. That's next week. If you've missed anything that we've been doing this month, everything is available on podcast. You can download it now. It's all on our YouTube channel. Definitely check that out and also check out the calendar. Go to our social media sites and check out the calendar so that you know every day who's going to be on, what's happening, and that if something's already passed, that you make sure and go back and listen to it in podcast. All right, you guys, have a wonderful weekend. I hope that this weekend gets you to some event that is celebrating the people that you and I both love on the autism spectrum or that you're celebrating yourself. We'll see you on Monday. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you too. Bye-bye for now. If you found anything helpful in this video, please give us a like. In fact, make sure that you smash that subscribe button on YouTube and give us a like on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Instagram for important updates.
And please download our free podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much. See you next time.